Important dates in Christian history. 385 AD. In Milan, Bishop Ambrose defies the Empress. This event helped to establish the precedent of the Church confronting the state when necessary to protect Christian teaching and oppose injustice and corruption in government. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Segways, we got you segways here. This is Wretched Radio. There are many times in a witness encounter, God will just set it up on a tee for you. You're chit-chatting about the weather, sports, whatever the subject du jour, which happens to be the subject of the day, whatever it is, it'll just present itself. And all you need to do is go for it and preach the law and the gospel. There are other times where you do have to work at it. You somehow have to figure out, how do I get into a witness conversation? How do I start this chat about Jesus Christ? Hey, can't think of a better way to get there than a national holiday. No, not Christmas and Thanksgiving, although those certainly work. They do, by the way. Just ask somebody at Thanksgiving time, what are you thankful for? Who do you thank? Where do those blessings come from? Christmas? Do you know the meaning of Christmas? Doesn't matter what time of year, you can use those holidays to get right to the gospel. I would suggest to you, no better national holiday to use than Easter. This is a demonstration of that with Tyler. This is Tyler. We are at Georgia State University, and Tyler is going to tell us the meaning of Easter. Go, Tyler.
Easter is... it's used to, I don't really care for Easter much, but people like to do Easter egg rolls and go to church.
You don't care for Easter? Why not? It's all about bunnies and stuff.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't really make sense. I don't understand. Bunnies don't produce eggs. So the egg part associated with Easter and the bunny ass, I don't even know where it came from.
I don't either. But that's not what Easter is. Do you know what the meaning of Easter is?
I think it has some sort of religious connotation.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Do you know what it is?
It's not the birth of Jesus.
That's Christmas.
I have no idea.
Really? You've never heard what the meaning of Easter is?
No.
May I tell you?
Sure.
All right, so here's the setup, okay? Because that's kind of, Easter's kind of the punchline, if you will. But here's the long setup: God made the universe. Okay. His nature is perfect, holy, righteous, good, just. We people aren't. We break His laws, His commandments. We do things we're not supposed to do, and our conscience reminds us what we're doing is wrong. So when we lie or steal or cheat or do things that we'd rather not have our parents know about, God does. And because of His nature, because He's holy, He's going to make sure that everybody who's broken the laws is going to receive their due reward, which is to be punished for their law breaking. Just like a criminal who breaks an earthly law, they get punished by going to jail. God, the just judge of the world, punishes lawbreakers, and He sends them to an eternal jail called
hell.
Exactly. All right. But now, God is also good, and He's rich in mercy, and He doesn't want people like you to go to hell. But here's the tension. See if you can feel this with me. God is just. He's got to punish lawbreakers, but He's good, and He likes to save and forgive sinners. But if He just forgives people, then He's not just. It would be like a judge saying, I know you've broken the laws, criminal, but I'm a nice guy. I'll let you go. You would go, wait a second. That's not just. So God, in order to be just and good, had a plan before He created the universe to send His Son, who is?
Jesus.
Exactly. Who is God in the flesh. He was born on Christmas, lived a perfect life. You and I can't. You and I, if we're being honest, we lie.
I think I would dispute that He was born on Christmas.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue with you on that because we don't know the date. But good on you. You caught me. You're right. We don't know the exact date. But we'll just say the day He was born, He lived the perfect life that you and I can't. He amassed all kinds of righteousness that we don't possess. And then Easter week, it was actually the Passion Week or Passover week, He was punished by men. They stripped Him, beat Him, scourged Him, put a crown of thorns on His head, spat on Him, and then hung Him on a cross. Here's what was happening. That's Good Friday. That's 3 days before Easter. God was pouring out his wrath on Jesus Christ on behalf of sinners who will repent and put their trust in him. So when he died, he said, it is finished, because his task was to live the perfect life we couldn't, to take the punishment that we deserve so that God can forgive us, so he can be just and he can be forgiving at the exact same time. Third day, he rose from the dead. That's the punchline. That's Easter. That's the definitive stamp that says what Jesus did on behalf of sinners was an acceptable sacrifice from God, who raised him from the dead. That's what Easter is.
I think Easter, instead of it being celebrated with bunnies and fake grass, shouldn't it be celebrated with blood?
Well, what are you studying? You're kind of smart, and it's kind of annoying me right now.
Political science.
Okay. No, I agree with the bunny thing. Makes no sense to me. Now, some people would say that's kind of like a pagan thing or fertility thing. I have no idea what it has to do with what I just told you.
But I think that if you celebrate the gruesomeness of his killing, then the correct way of doing it, or the most accurate way to depict it, would be to have crosses around with red stains and blood. But I think that that would turn a lot of people off.
The story that I just told you, and you were very patient to listen to, mm-hmm. Render a verdict. Is it true or false?
Is it true? Specifically, what are you referring to? Is it true or false? The entire narrative? I think aspects of it are questionable.
Which ones?
Specifically, I think the question, is it true? Like, I also study philosophy a little. There's a lot to say something is true. I mean, from a philosophical standpoint, no, I don't think that your premises necessarily form a obvious conclusion. So I don't think that I wouldn't say it's true or valid. So I guess it depends on your perspective.
I'll bet you'd say it's true for me, though, wouldn't you?
That, yes.
May I suggest to you, it doesn't matter what I think about it. It either is or it is not true. Render a verdict, true or not true. Because to me, I can believe that the Easter Bunny is God, and if I just bounce around with a basket full of chocolate eggs, I'm going to go spend eternity in a fertility field with a bunch of bunnies. But I can believe that, and I can think it's true, but I think we realize that's just false. So I'm asking you, this story that I just shared with you about Jesus Christ dying, rising from the dead, true or false?
It depends how you can't say that it's true.
Okay, let me try this. George Washington was the first president of the United States, true or false? Come on, Tyler. Say it.
George Washington, that's in dispute as well. That is not an empirical
fact. It is not in dispute.
George Washington. I can't remember what his name.
John F. Kennedy was assassinated in 1963.
That is empirical fact.
Why?
Because he was killed. He was undisputably the president of the United States, and...
How do you know?
Because he was elected.
But did you witness any of this?
Did I witness him...
Were you an eyewitness to his presidency and assassination?
No, but going through primary accounts, then yes.
Right, so primary accounts would satisfy your standard for whether or not something is true or false.
That and along with other things, yes.
So let me just try to tackle that one for you. There were 500 eyewitnesses to his resurrection. Specifically, he had 12 disciples. One of them is the one who betrayed him, whose name was? Judas Iscariot.
Okay.
Nobody calls their kids Judas anymore. Okay. So Judas Iscariot betrayed him, but the other 11, they witnessed his resurrection. They saw him being beaten, hung on a cross. They knew for a fact he was dead. 3 days later, came to life. All 11 of them willing to die. 10 of them
were put to the stake. They were set on fire. They were hung up upside down, and they refused to recant. And this is really important, Tyler, because you actually set the standard yourself. They were eyewitnesses. They didn't just believe a guy like me or a street evangelist. They saw it, and that's why they were willing to die for it. They have eyewitnesses.
They saw him being resurrected.
They saw him raised from the dead. Third day, came out of the tomb.
They physically saw him.
Yeah.
They physically saw. I thought something has to do with his spirit, something spiritual relating to that.
No, his physical body came back from the grave, and they saw him. 500 eyewitnesses who were all willing to die. And we've got accounts of it called Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. There's some extra biblical sources, but they're the most reliable, the people who are willing to die for it.
Got to pause right there, fully recognizing a lesser man would use that opportunity to plug the man who split time, 22 proofs Jesus is God, eyewitness accounts demonstrating they were willing to die for what they saw, the resurrection. It's the linchpin miracle that demonstrates Jesus is God. That booklet is available at wretched.org/time, but I'm not a lesser host. We'll continue our conversation with Tyler next on Wretched Radio.
Most of us haven't really thought about persecution, not the real kind, not the kind where following Jesus actually costs you something. But Christians throughout history have indeed faced it. And depending on where things are headed, we might too. So what does the Bible say you're supposed to do when the pressure mounts? That's exactly what our resource, Persecution, is all about. It's teaching built on the book of 1 Peter with historical context from the Fox's Book of Martyrs. You'll get a biblical framework for faithfulness when things aren't easy anymore. Fix your hope on heaven, grow in holiness, and submit to authority, unless they tell you to sin, and keep proclaiming the gospel anyway. This is honest teaching, and it's more timely than any of us may want to admit. Persecution, available now on Fortis Plus. Download the app for free on your smartphone, on your smart TV, or just simply go to fortisplus.org. Hey, thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. You know, there's no shortage of voices telling women how to handle anxiety, how to navigate relationships, how to find their identity. Honestly, most of it sounds pretty good until you realize it's just self-help slapped with Bible verses. That's not the same thing as biblical wisdom. And that's why we at Fortis Institute present to you The Better Way with Libby Glosson. Libby is an ACBC certified biblical counselor, and she's not just interested in giving you coping strategies. No, Libby's desire is to take you to scripture and show you what God actually says about the things that you're actually walking through. And this is the kind of content our gospel partners are making possible. If the content we're producing at Fortis Institute has been meaningful to you, I want to ask you to prayerfully consider becoming an ongoing monthly gospel partner. Just go to fortisinstitute.org right now and find out what it would look like for you to be a part of getting content like The Better Way into the hands of women who need it. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel. 369 million. That's how many people are a part of the New Apostolic Reformation movement. And if you've never heard of it, that's part of the problem. Maybe you have heard of Jesus culture. Maybe your teenager listens to their worship music. Maybe your church sings their songs on Sunday morning. But you don't know what they actually teach and where it leads. Drunk in the Spirit pulls back the curtain on one of the most destructive forces in Christianity today. Who are these people? What do they believe? And why should it matter to your family and your local church? This isn't fear-mongering, it's education, because you can't guard against something you don't recognize, and this movement has tentacles in places you wouldn't expect. If you care about protecting your family and your church from false teaching that sounds Christ-centered, but it's not, this is essential. Drunk in the Spirit, it is streaming now for free on Fortis Plus. Download the app on your smartphone, on your smart TV, or just simply go to fortisplus.org.
Know your church fathers. Athenagoras was a Christian philosopher in Athens who used his training to defend the Christian faith against Roman persecution. He wrote On the Resurrection of the Dead, arguing that the nature of God, the nature of humanity, and the concept of justice only makes sense if there is a physical resurrection.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Actually, I think I'm going to change my name to Costello because I'm talking to a guy named, yeah, but this is Wretched Radio, a witness encounter with Tyler, political science, philosophy major. No matter what I tossed at him, yeah, but this is Tyler.
Things get lost in translation. Things like when you tell one person a story, then that other person says the story, and then someone else changes the story. Like something gets lost in that. So I don't think that it's as verifiable and definitive as the JFK thing. I mean, I can pull up a video and see JFK's head getting taken off. I can see him being sworn in as president of the United States. I can look at FEC records showing that he was elected as president of the United States.
But nobody had to defend what they eyewitnessed with JFK with their life. But Jesus had people who were willing to die.
The level of commitment does not make me believe that it's true.
Oh, but if it does, if the person was an eyewitness. See, if I just believed a tale when my parents told me to believe in the Easter Bunny and I did, you put a gun to my head and say, you're going to vouch for the Easter Bunny? Out of 500 people, one of them would go, okay, I'm making it up. Nobody did. Everybody was willing to die.
But you could say that same thing about a lot of people. You could say the same thing about terrorists. They believe in their cause so much that they're willing to die. That doesn't mean that it's true or not.
No, that's very, very fair. But that's not exactly what this is.
No, I think that you're offering that as evidence as just because their level of commitment, their level of commitment makes and that they really believed it means that it's true. No, it doesn't show that it's true. It just means that it just shows that they are very committed into what they believe.
But again, the key here is not just somebody who believed it. For instance, people who are willing today, a terrorist today, they maybe believe their holy book, but they didn't see their prophet. They didn't see somebody rise from the dead. These were the eyewitnesses, and none of them recanted. That's the key. Eyewitnesses. And you yourself said that's the standard. Jesus' story meets your criteria.
That was a standard along with other...
All right. Let me share something with you. I think you might find this somewhat compelling. All right. You've mentioned the Bible, like telephone translation sort of game. Okay. All of the manuscripts, the Bible, everything that we have in the Bible was written in the first century. The New Testament was written in the first century, not hundreds of years. There's a field of study called textual criticism. This is when we study books in antiquity, the Bible compared to, say, Julius Caesar's Gallic Wars, Homer, Virgil, any of them, is the number one most authenticated text, bar none. Now, hang in there with me because I can see the skeptical look. You can know for a fact that the New Testament that we have is exactly what was written down 2,000 years ago. It's undisputable. That doesn't mean it's true, though. It just means it's accurate. So all I did for you is just kind of knock down the domino of the telephone game. These are accurate translations of the original manuscripts, but that doesn't prove they're true. They are accurate, but the question is, are they true?
When you ask if something is true or not, it's and then the primary rationale as why it's true is other people's account is flimsy.
But that's all of history, though, right? You believe Napoleon Bonaparte, he waged some wars. You believe in the French Revolution. All of that comes from manuscripts, and you believe those. You probably believe Julius Caesar was assassinated on the steps by his buddy Brutus, right?
Yeah.
Those translations, just so you know, the ones that we have from Caesar's Gallic Wars, the earliest manuscript is 900 years away from the actual events. We've got 5 manuscripts, the Bible. We have manuscripts within a couple of centuries, 5,800 of them. See the difference? You believe Julius Caesar, he passes your standard, but you're not letting the Bible pass the same standard, which sprints past the authenticity of Caesar's Gallic Wars. How come? It's the best history book, most accurate book from antiquity. Why wouldn't you accept that and believe that?
Why wouldn't I? Well, I don't think it's not consistent. I guess because I'm not a biblical scholar. It's just that it doesn't. When you start talking about religious texts, it always comes down to there is a way that in your mind that you can do gymnastics to make yourself believe whatever you want.
I wouldn't argue with that.
And so, like, I hear it from you, and then I could, from that perspective, I could go to a Muslim and hear their side of the Quran, and they could say merely the same things, like, these are people who've seen this, who've seen that, who've seen that. It's like, it just comes down to everyone says they're right, and no one can really say definitively if they're right or not. Like, I don't think that there is really anybody disputing the facts relating to Caesar, as you said. I mean, religious texts and religious interpretations and the things that are contained in it are always up for dispute, and people dispute them all the time.
Right, but at the same time, that does not mean that one of them isn't true. You can't, just because there's a debate doesn't mean that somebody isn't right, correct?
Yeah, that's true.
Furthermore, I would suggest you, let's say I had you pick a card, and you pick the Seven of Spades. We bury it into a deck of cards, and we start flipping them over. Once we find your card, the Seven of Spades, I don't need to look at the rest of the cards. I found the one I'm looking for. I found the one that you picked. Same thing is true with truth. Once I found the truth, I don't need to examine every single religion. I'm done with my search because this is actually true. How many lies have you told in your life?
Countless.
If you knew I told countless lies, what name, what would you call me?
A human?
Rhymes with pants on fire.
You would say a liar.
So would you agree that you too are a liar?
I would say that everyone lies.
No argument. All right. Let's talk about stealing. Have you ever stolen anything?
Wait, I think there's a category. I think there's a distinction between saying that you've lied in the past and giving a person the general categorization as you are a liar. I think you are a liar gives off a connotation as you are a habitual liar. So
I only need to tell one lie to be called a liar. I only need to murder one time and I'm a murderer.
Okay. All right.
Fair enough.
Fair.
All right. How many things have you stolen in your life?
I have no idea.
But you have.
Yes.
So what name would you call me if you knew I stole stuff?
It would be labeled as a thief.
Fair enough. So you and I are liars and thieves, right? Lust. Jesus said, you look at a woman with lust, you've committed adultery in your heart. Innocent or guilty on that charge?
Oh, I plead guilty on that.
So you are a lying, thieving adulterer. Have you ever taken God's name in vain?
Oh, I'm sure I have.
So God made you, has given you life, your backpack, your gum, your education, every good thing that you've enjoyed. And instead of praising his name, you dragged it through the mud like a four-letter filth word. Fair enough? I know you don't believe in him.
Say that again. I zoned out when you were partially with.
Wow, it wasn't that long of a sentence.
I was thinking about something else.
You were thinking about somebody who just walked by. I got that. Okay. Instead of using his name to say, thanks for everything, creator, you OMG, like you're saying a filthy word and dragging his name through the mud. It's called blasphemy in the Bible.
Well,
and you've done that.
The premise that of the creator aspect.
I understand that. But if he exists,
so
you've used his name in a lowly way.
If I accept all your premises, which I don't, but if I did, then yes.
So, Tyler, here's the deal. Someday, let's hope it's not today, but it could be. God calls your number. You're done. He's not going to sustain your life anymore. He's had enough of you.
Okay.
And he drags you into his courtroom, and he's the just judge on the bench, and you're in the docket, and the books are open, and he not only knows what you've seen, done, but what you've thought. Everything is exposed and brought into the light. Would God render an innocent or guilty verdict on Tyler?
Guilt? Innocent on what?
Breaking his laws.
Breaking his laws? Oh, yeah, I think guilty.
You're dead. God renders a verdict, guilty, sends you to hell, weeping, gnashing of teeth, lake of fire. It is no fun, nothing to look forward to, no parole date, forever and ever and ever.
Vindictive man.
Or that would be one guilty criminal.
I guess it depends on your perspective.
It also depends on who the judge is and against whom we've committed the crime. You see, our crimes, Tyler, aren't just committed against one another. They're committed against your sovereign. It's rebellion against the king. And that is why it demands an eternal punishment, because our crimes, we don't see them that bad, but he does.
I Thank you so much.
All right. See ya. Goodbye.
If you run into your own yeah, but, and there are many of them, you might want to get out of the realm of the intellect to the land of the conscience, because you might spend your entire time just, yeah, but this. Well, what about that? Yeah, but then, and they're never really hearing, because they simply turn it into an intellectual argument, which tends to be, not always, but tends to be rather fruitless. Use the law, convict of sin, righteousness, and judgment. Work with the Holy Spirit, using the word as much as you can. Use your apologetics as much as is needed in order to be polite. But please note, apologetics never caused anybody to drop to their knees. It is the gospel that will do that work alone. Law, gospel, repentance, faith. And then pray like nobody's business that God will save them. And until tomorrow, go serve your King.